You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 454. Film is a great tool to play with human emotions and thoughts. Maria Tassar.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Well, guys, today on the show, we have Robert Schwartzman, who has launched a new service to help independent filmmakers make money with their films. His website's called Altavod. And after doing some due diligence and making him go through an introductory interview to make sure everything was on the up and up, I was really, really impressed with what Altavod was doing. It's a new way of self-distributing your film. And he really just wanted to put together a platform to help independent artists and independent filmmakers, because Robert comes from a long line of artists, him being a musician, a very well-known musician, as well as having his brother, Jason Schwartzman, an actor, very famous actor in Hollywood, his cousin, Sofia Coppola, uncle, Francis Ford Coppola, Nicolas Cage, another cousin, and so on. So he comes from a long line of artists, and he saw that there was a problem in the marketplace and wanted to kind of help. So we came on the show to talk about his platform, how he sees distribution moving forward, and what independent filmmakers can do to use what he learned in the music business and transfer it over to the movie business. And that's something I've been talking about for a long time, included in my book, Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, as using the music model and independent artists in the music industry as a model for independent filmmakers in the film business. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Robert Schwartzman. I'd like to welcome to the show Robert Schwartzman, man. How are you doing, Robert?
Good. Thank you. I'm great. I'm with you, so I feel better right now.
Thank you. Anytime there's some sort of human contact.
Ferrari. Yeah, exactly. No, I just wanted to say how Ferrari is the coolest last name.
Like, thank you.
I think anyone could ever have. So,
well,
congratulations.
I appreciate that. It has been good for the brand. It's been good for the branding. You know,
yeah, incredible.
It could have been Alex Pinto, and it wouldn't have nearly had the same ring to it.
Have you spent time in Italy, by the way?
I've never been. I'm dying to go. I've never been to Europe. I gotta go to Europe.
Wow. Yeah. Not right now. But
no. Not good times right now.
Not a good time right now.
But maybe in the next 5 years, 6 years, hopefully we'll be able to travel over to Europe again. Like, like my wife and I just want to like live in Barcelona for like 3 or 4 months. You know.
go to Italy and just spend, if you're going to go to Italy, just take your time and just go to Italy and just explore the country. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sometimes people are like, let's go to Italy, then France. But just, there's so much to see in Italy between the north and the south.
Yeah.
And, but when you go, I guarantee you, just, you'll remember this conversation, but you'll check into a hotel. Mr. Ferrari. Ah, come on, Mr. Ferrari. Like, it's just cool that you have that name, because they're going to freak out when they see that.
Am I gonna be able to open, if the doors are going to open, I'm going to get reservations a lot easier?
Pasta everywhere you go.
So, fun side note before we get started with this interview, I actually sold olive oil and vinegar. I had the largest gourmet shop in LA it was just olive oil and vinegar, and it was originally called Ferrari Olive Oil, which then I later changed the name. But yes, so if you need to know about olive oil or 18 year age balsamic vinegar from Modena, then I will I can talk to you for hours about it.
By the way, I've been to Modena, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure. That's the only vinegar. That's the only balsamic you have. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But I'm going to text you about, I'm going to hit you up about it, by the way. There's a whole world of olive oil out there that no one even thinks about.
Oh, I know. I know.
It's like it's like fine wine.
Oh, I know.
Understand it. Yeah.
I understand completely.
Much respect.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I know some people listening to the podcast, they've heard me mention that I used to have an olive oil company, and they're like, what?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, it is. That's a book. It was 3 years of my life. It's a whole thing. I was in Studio City. I was right on Ventura Boulevard.
Near what? What was the cross?
Oh God, what's the big one that goes to the other side? The big street. Oh God, Ventura.
Something.
Which one?
Oh, like Van Nuys or something.
Van Nuys, yeah, yeah. I was on. It was right by the Van Nuys. So Ventura and Van Nuys, the big crosswalk. You know where the Studio City Farmers Market is?
Yeah.
Right there, that corner.
Oh, okay. Laurel Canyon.
Laurel Canyon. Thank you. That was the one.
Canyon. That's the strip.
Oh yeah, I was. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The rent was very affordable. But anyway, I'm sorry, guys. We went on an olive oil side note here, you know. But so first, before we get started, man, how did you get into the business?
So I grew up in Los Angeles, and which means something, right? Because the city you grew up in. There's an industry. We, you know, this world is divided up into industry, and certain locations were where certain things came out of. You know, like if you go to Pittsburgh, they're called the Steelers because there's steel, and it changed. But I've been to Pittsburgh, and you see where things were shut down, and it's a bummer because it was an incredible industry there. Mm-hmm. But you know, this city we're in now, Los Angeles, was really founded by an industry called Hollywood, the film industry. Where people came to make movies and pursue their dreams in like show business, entertainment, coming from places like New York, where people were like on the stage, people came out here and had a career on the screen and, or radio personalities, things like this. But, so my family, has been in LA for many years, and they were a lot of them were filmmakers and musicians. My grandfather was a film composer. He started off really just as a flutist for some great composers in New York, great conductors. He traveled as a touring musician and then settled in LA to score movies. And he ended up teaching music like in high school as a way to pay the bills. And then eventually got sort of his break eventually as a musician writing for film. And I'll go back to that in a second, but. My mom is an actress. She came out to LA from New York. She's a Long Island, born in Long Island. And she would travel with her father, the conductor, came to LA. No, saying her, she's an actress. Her name is Talia Shire, is her stage name.
Oh, yes.
And
I might have heard. She's been in a few independent films, yes.
She has, actually. Rocky was considered an independent movie.
It was an independent film.
Very indie.
And she was your grandmother? She's your grandmother?
My mom.
Oh, that's your mom. Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And her brother, Francis, is a director that we know, Francis Coppola.
Sure.
And he came to LA as a screenwriter. And then he's a real theater. They're all like real thespians, you know, mm-hmm. that generation. they were schooled in theater and then ended up taking that skill set and put it on the screen. But so that was what drew them to LA, was to sort of be in this industry. And then I was born, my brother, we were all born within that world of coming to that next generation of LA. And, you know, I grew up wanting to make movies as a kid. I would shoot movies with my friends that we took very seriously. We thought we were making like the next real Robin Hood action movie in our backyard. Yeah. This wasn't like, it wasn't like just a, we wrote scripts. We cast our friends. We got wardrobe. We picked cameras out. We shot stuff. And then we screened it for people. We cared about the opening credit sequence and the scroll ever made it feel more real to us. But yeah. I ended up going to film school to study film editing and directing, made some like a music video, short film. And then I got swept up into the music industry because I started writing songs. My other part of my life was music. Because as you know, we have a grandfather who was a composer. We have a very musical family. I think our film side of our family is very much influenced by the musical part of our family. Mm-hmm. But as you know, music's such a big part of those movies. But so anyway, I got swept up into the music industry for a long time. And then I found my way back to film by sort of stumbling into a couple acting roles, which was pretty cool to kind of be on that side of the camera. But always with the hope of directing and writing and creating projects from the ground up. Because I never really felt like I was getting all of myself out creatively if I was just showing up as an interpretive like artist performing somebody else's work, which I respect that process. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like I wanted to throw more of myself into the process of creating movies and also now television, which is now the big thing to do, but storytelling. And I think songwriting is very much like storytelling. When you write music, these are like short stories you're creating. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And very much a similar process of communicating emotions to audiences. So that it's all kind of like tied for me, but, and we'll talk about it today, but now my life is like spilled into the world of like, how do we help filmmakers like reach audiences? How do we help create a new distribution world out there to really take care of film? Mm-hmm. That's where Altavod was created, this platform. And my company Utopia is also acquiring and distributing feature films. So, you know, it's like I get to create and I get to help be a part of other journeys of filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And just try to throw more opportunity into this world so we can really raise all ships, you know, together.
Yeah. And you starred in your cousin, Sophia. Yeah. Again, another little known Coppola. So she asked you to be in her first short film when she had never directed anything, right?
Yeah, she did. She had like a fashion brand called Milkfed, which was really cool if anyone's watching. It was such a cool brand. She spent a lot of time in Japan, sort of chasing the world of branding and fashion. And then ended up moving into directing. And, she, you know, to kick things off, she shot a short film up in Napa, mm-hmm. where that's where she grew up in like wine country. Mm-hmm. And it was called Lick the Star for all the sort of film fans out there. And I played just like a kid in high school, just like a snot-nosed kid or whatever you'd say, like mm-hmm. just like a kid in this. Because she, you could see in her work, she likes to work with young actors. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of like at that age at the right time, and she put me in her film. And then she was then adapting Virgin Suicides into a feature, her first feature. And she envisioned me as this Italian kid. I slicked my hair back. I had braces. And I lived on set with it. One of the most valuable things, not only just being a part of it as an actor, but of the Virgin Suicides. But I stayed on set with her pretty much the whole shoot. And I lived with her and I just watched her shoot. And it was more of like for me just to be a fly on the wall and just kind of learn and be a part of it. She was finding her way and figuring it out, as I think every director does on any movie, actually. I don't know if you ever stop finding it. But I just got to sort of shadow her and also be in a couple scenes. And, you know, just kind of like just was all these are just growing little moments of inspiration, you know.
That must have been amazing. And then you fall into working with Gary Marshall in Princess Diaries. And
yeah, well, Gary was doing Princess Diaries, and I was obviously we all love Pretty Woman, and Gary's like a comedic legend,
sure,
an icon. And I was a young kid in high school. I was about to go into senior year of my high school. I was also writing songs and playing concerts under my band, Rooney. But Gary had me, I got a random request, like, hey, Gary wants you to come read for this movie called The Virgin, the Princess Diaries. And I was like, oh, like, cool. Awesome. And he's like, yeah, he saw you in Virgin Suicides and really liked you. And that was quite a few years after, you know, like that was many years later. Right? So it was cool that he asked me to come in and read with many other people who had been reading, but I just kept I went for it. I tried my hardest to get this role. And, you know, I went back many times. He had me read again and again and again and again and again. And then by the last read, I was walked in and like Anne Hathaway was cast as Mia. And I got to read as a chemistry read with her. They shot it like a movie actually in his Falcon studio in Burbank. And next thing I know, I was like, oh, you got cast in this movie. But it went on to become a very well-known movie because it's part of a book series as well.
Sure.
But I didn't know really, I just wasn't like prepared for what that world was, you know, even though I grew up around filmmakers, I wasn't like groomed to be like a filmmaker, like you will be a filmmaker, son, one day you will act in movies. Like it wasn't thrust upon us. We just were around it. We went to set. I helped move tables and refill the peanut bowl. And like, I got a summer job. Like I just was around it. You know what I mean? No one was really pushing to it. You see a lot of young actors today who grew up like fully as a baby. They're an actor. And they're just like young adults. They know it. They're like wizardry. Like they know acting like that. They're on the Disney Channel. They're like masters. Yeah. That wasn't my mentality. I was like, yeah, cool. Like I want to make music and direct movies. And yeah, I'll be in this movie. And you know what I mean? Just kind of finding it. Anyway, so.
Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you work up, you're born in a logging family and they just log all day. Well, chances are you're going to understand the logging business or, you know, the restaurant business or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
It just happens to be that you were born into, you know, the movie business and arguably one of the most, you know, prolific families in cinema history. I mean, as a family unit, I mean, in between Roman and Sophia and Francis and Thea, I mean, your mom, I mean, it's just, and it just keeps, and then Nicolas too, Nicolas Cage. And there's more. I'm sure there's hundreds of you guys.
Well, it's interesting because there's other family members, you know, who work on the other side of the camera who I know aren't in the spotlight as much. But my brother, John Schwartzman's a very successful cinematographer. He just shot the new Jurassic World. He came up with Michael Bay and shot all the Michael Bay movies, Armageddon, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
He's like John's like a top like DP and he's so good. And a lot of like, you know, people who work on crews don't get as much love sometimes, but you know, we have an incredible family who also span outside of just, you know, walking the red carpet.
Sure. No, yeah, anyway, exactly.
And it's cool to be around them for myself because I get to pick their brain. And I directed a movie called The Unicorn and John was nice enough to come lend his cinematography skills and he co-shot it with another DP. But it's cool to have that camaraderie because you can kind of share thoughts and ideas with other fellow filmmakers.
That's awesome, man. Now, you reached out to me a while ago about your new platform, AltaVod, and I'm assuming you did your research on me and what I've done in the distribution space when you reached out to me. And I was very hesitant to even talk to you about it. I'm like, you know, man, I can't. Another effing platform. You know, so I actually grilled you for an hour, a pre-interview before I put you on the show because I can smell. I can smell it when it's like, oh, okay. Because I get hit up by platforms literally every week.
Yeah.
New streaming platform here, new this there. And it just all that. So when you reached out to me, I kind of wanted to go into it a little bit. And I was very impressed with just the aesthetics and what you were trying to do, you're trying to do with the platform. So once I got the details, I was like, let me have you on the show. And I'm going to grill you on the show too. So filmmakers can really get an idea of what you have to offer. So what is AltaVod?
So AltaVod is a direct-to-consumer video on demand platform.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows somebody who either a filmmaker who shot a film and owns the film and can sell it to people, or a distributor, or a producer that might have a bunch of back title, sort of library title, to onboard movies themselves. So like, you know, you have a direct line to release movies to audiences without having to go through a middleman, like a buyer, to aggregate to a place like iTunes or Amazon, for example. So there are many transactional video on demand platforms, AKA TVOD, for all the sort of terminology. TVOD is a non-compete type of arrangement where you don't have to have exclusivity over that film. That's why you can see movies, the same exact title, available on so many platforms like iTunes, Amazon, for rent. But as people out there know, if something's available for free on a subscription platform, it's typically exclusive to that platform, because that's what gives that platform an edge to bring you, the customer, in to pay a monthly subscription fee.
Right.
So AltaVod has two entry points. There's the B2B side. So businesses like filmmakers can onboard movies and make them available for rent or purchase at their own price point. And I'll go into the secret sauce of like why we love AltaVod. But I'll just boil it down to the simplicity of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's a place to like watch and discover new movies, typically from filmmakers that aren't getting to share those movies across other platforms. And they do better as far as the split structure. So you're directly supporting the creators of those movies. You're not having to go through all these different streams to get to that person financially. Mm-hmm. They take the biggest cut. So filmmakers make the most money on our platform. And then there's the other side of it, which is the consumer. So the film lover, the film watcher. So if you go there, there's no cost to go there and go window shopping. You can just see what's on the shelf, like an old Blockbuster video, and which I missed, by the way. But I missed the experience of like, oh, I want to get this movie tonight.
Yeah.
But I don't miss the late fees, because I always pay late fees.
I don't miss rewinding.
I'm the late fee guy.
I don't miss rewinding. I don't miss rewinding. I do not miss getting into the car in the rain, driving, going inside, and they're out of the new release that you're looking for. I am not.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm gonna challenge you on the video store, because I worked in a video store for 5 years. So I think there's a nostalgia in our heads of how awesome it was, and it was, and right, I think it's awesome. But the practicality it's the equivalent of, you could download it on iTunes quickly or play a record, and it's not even that, because a record is still better and arguably better quality or different kind of aesthetics.
Right.
VHS is VHS, dude. It sucks.
Right.
Yeah. You know, comparatively to what you want. And DVD, laser discs. Yeah. So yeah. I know there's a nostalgia, especially of guys of our generation. And I'm probably older than you, but who remember what a video store was. But
right.
But you know, if it was open, I'd go to one just for fun.
Yeah, just for fun. Well, so, you know, as somebody who, people watching are here also who just like love movies, discovering new movies, what we all forget is that there are a lot more movies out there than the ones that are available to us. So, and that's because, and I'll go into sort of that problem, which is why we started AltaVod. AltaVod, we worked our way back from problems. We didn't work our way to solutions. They came from existing problems. And we truly are here to help solve a problem that I think is sucks, and I would love to fix it, you know, or be one of many solutions. But, you know, for consumers, it's, you know, it's another place to watch movies. Hopefully you like the movies we have. We're getting filmmakers who are uploading movies directly to AltaVod, and they're only from what we see on our platform. So that's cool, because you're discovering movies that you might not see everywhere else. And look, if you, I buy a lot of stuff on Amazon. I do a lot of online shopping. There are certain products that I know I'm going to get. I'm not just looking for whatever and I'm going to pick whatever's hot on Amazon. You know, I'm somebody who, if I know what I want, I'd rather buy it from the people who make the most from it than pay to a third party, like a department store.
Sure, of course.
Because there's a lot of eating of fees on the way back to the office. Mm-hmm. Right, so AltaVod, again, it's like, if you know you want to watch a certain movie and we have it, watch it on our platform, because you know it's going to benefit the people who made it or brought it to you. So anyway.
So then... So what's the major difference between AltaVod and Vimeo?
Yeah. So the main difference is we got to, you know, Vimeo has been around for a bit. And, you know, as a filmmaker myself, like I've been reluctant to put my movie on Vimeo. And I always ask myself, like, Vimeo is amazing. Like what they've built is great. They have really good technology and it works, you know, 99% of the time or whatever. I mean, it was everything has bugs and problems. Mm-hmm. Always. My phone has bugs and problems. Mm. But I was going to make a bad joke about bugs under my house. Sorry. And my house has bugs underneath.
Yeah.
Vimeo. Vimeo, the issue is that, you know, as a filmmaker myself, I want my movies to exist in a world, in a network that's just all about movies. I don't want to be in a place that has so much stuff that's not movie related. Like, for example, you know, I watch like a lot of camera tests on Vimeo. I watch somebody use, you know, shoots like a lens flare with like a lens and a camera to show you what it can do if you shoot this way or that way. And I don't want my movie like next to that video, next to a music video, next to a short film, next to a random episode of something. I'd rather my movie live within a world, a network of other like-minded people who are making movies for, that's what they do. It's a better way to discover movies. I'm more likely to be discovered on a platform where people are coming here to watch movies. So that's one big thing. We actually have a better split structure than Vimeo. And it's not a competition, by the way. They have other tools that we don't do. Mm-hmm. But you make more, you know, per sale than like Vimeo. It's a 91% to the filmmaker, you know, instead of, it's really 1% difference, but instead of 10% to like Vimeo. The other thing with Vimeo is, again, going back to the network effect, you know, your movie, when you put on Altavod, lives on a platform of lots of movies. It's not like you're going to embed your player on a random website, right? So what we're trying to do is help filmmakers get rid of the need for a website. Because look, you have to go get a GoDaddy or wherever you're going to get your URL, which is a thing. You got to pay for that. Maybe you pay for privacy. You're spending money just to get the name .com or .net or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then you have to find some kind of hosting platform to build it. And someone on your team has to maintain that website and introduce certain tools and update your thing, collect emails, email those people. Hey, come to my website. I'm going to put the new IndieWire review on there. I'm going to put a link for my movie on iTunes. It just takes more like maintenance and there's cost to do that. But on our platform, there's no cost to do that. So we've built it to be all the things you would need as a filmmaker. So throw your website away and just create an Altavod page. And the beauty of the Altavod page too is you collect all the data so you can report back to people who follow you, who opt into your movie. But let's say that you, and this is a way I'm excited for someone to, you know, people to start playing with it, but let's say you made a movie and it's going to go to South by Southwest, right? There's no guarantee that you're going to sell that movie if it's not sold yet, right? If it's made truly independently. So you have quite a lot of risk now on the table as a filmmaker, right? And your investors are going to be like, hey, man, did we sell it? You know, you're going to be getting calls all the day, freaking out. But you're better off just creating an Altavod page and starting to push people to the page so you can start to build an audience early on in the discovery process. Because if you don't sell the movie for whatever reason, and it's happening more and more today, you can simply upload your movie to that same page and make it available to the audience that you've already established. So it's a way of getting early marketing. It's a way to like start driving customers to your world and then finishing the thought and making your movie available for stream or rental, right? Mm-hmm. If it goes that way, because we all need like a safety net today. It's like a trapeze artist. You don't want to hit the ground, right? You want to know something's going to catch you. And I think that like we need tools today as filmmakers to be that safety net. Because if it all goes to SHIT, I'm not sure if I can say these things
sure,
on the podcast.
You can.
Okay. If it all goes to shit, you want to know I've got a plan, right? And I think people come to your podcast and they do their homework on Google and they look for the next way to be independent. And also there are filmmakers, Alex, out there that are saying, you know what? I had a movie. I sold my movie to a distributor. I don't want to do it again. Like, screw the distributor. I just want to be my own distributor, right? I want to be the master of that sort of release process. I have my trailer. I have my poster. I already paid for it. I made my movie for blah, 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 and I have a little bit more extra money in the bank account. I can run my ads online and Instagram. I can do boosting on socials. I can do the same thing a distributor is going to do, mm-hmm, myself. So why am I just giving my copyright away or whatever for years if I already have created the tools to go reach an audience? And that's the beauty of today's world is forget Altava, just everything out there is all about reaching people, right? You can do it yourself if you want to do it. It just takes a little more elbow grease to want to finish, to carry that mentality. Altavod is a way to sort of power the release process and introduce people to a way to rent and consume your content through your own video on demand, you know, process. It's fully customizable. You know, back in the day when I was putting music out on iTunes, myself and a lot of musicians were bummed out that iTunes controlled my price point. They were like, you have to sell it. If you put your album on iTunes, you have to make each song available a la carte. And I was like, well, what if my album's like an album and it's a concept record and each song threads to the next one? Mm-hmm. And I want you to buy it for X amount of money. No, you can't do that. iTunes says what it's going to sell for, right? How they're going to buy it. And I remember that really rubbed people the wrong way because you're like, wait, I slave over my work. I love my work. I bleed for my work. And they get to control my price point? This doesn't feel right. So again, working backwards from that feeling, going through it as a musician, we're taking our cues and we're introducing it to Altavod. So again, customizable price point. The ability to swap out your movie file overnight. Like, why do I have to wait 3 or 4 months to onboard my movie to other platforms? I want it out tomorrow.
Right.
I just got written up in an article. It's got to be available next week. It's too hard. These big cruise ships can't turn fast enough in this industry that we're living in. And it's too, everything is just changing every day. The buyers out there, the gatekeepers change how they buy, when they buy, what they buy. It's just, we have to be like flexible today. And I think we built a platform that provides you flexibility and control, transparency, access for you, the filmmaker, to run with it and be successful. We're not going to do your homework for you. It's not about our audience. It's about you introducing your audience to your content.
Now, the very important question is, how do filmmakers get paid?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Yes, good question. So you go to the platform, you create an account. Mm-hmm. It's going to ask you to put a credit card in because eventually there's going to be like a maintenance fee to keep your movies on the platform, which is going to be much less. It's cheaper than Vimeo and Squarespace and
GoDaddy
and all that stuff. So it's just a way to keep your movie on monthly as a filmmaker, just to keep your content on there. Right now, everything's free, so there's no onboarding costs to just use it. You could log in and see, it reports to you how your movie's doing, like an Airbnb website. So call it monthly reporting. So you can access everything like in the minute. You can go see what's selling. Mm-hmm. You have access to who's opting in. So you have access to email addresses of your consumers that are watching your movie. And then if you want to release funds, you can release funds, but think about it as like a monthly payout, but with manual login to see what you're selling and when you're selling it. And you know, again, we as a platform take a 9% commission. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry.
But what is the actual process? Like is the money going into your accounts? Are you splitting it out or is it going to, are you a throughput? Where's the money live once I charge or rent?
It questions everything. So like, we sell on Altavod, right? We are the store. You sell on our platform, $10. Altavod uses Stripe, which is a third-party payment system. It's a secure, trusted system that a lot of people have accounts with.
Everyone does, yeah.
Right. So you can wire funds from the Altavod system to your bank account directly from the platform. So it reports to you your earnings, and then you can take the funds from that platform to yourself.
So money comes in. Out of a $10 payment, does 90 cents go right to you right off the bat? Does it get split up that way?
Yeah. So, there's a payment made. We will tally up. You can log in and see how many movies you've rented and sold. And then you would tie your bank to that account. Your account would be tied. So just like, again, Airbnb, I'm just kind of using that easy process. And then it shows you in our reporting statements what piece has been taken out you know, against platform fees, and then what goes to the filmmaker. So you can see how many you sold, sort of gross sales, and then what nets out to you as a filmmaker.
And that money is sitting in a Stripe account.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's not sitting in a Altavat account that you will send out, because that's where Distributor got into a lot of trouble. That was the problem. Well, that was the problem. All money coming in would sit in their account, and then they would pay out, which is what most distribution or aggregators do. It's the way the system is set up. It's not set up with any sort of transparency. So it sits in a bank account, and you know, normal distribution companies who are somewhat honorable, which I know is an oxymoron, they generally have separate accounts that are dedicated to monies that are not theirs. So it's kind of like separated, and then you would pay out that way. So Distributor did that, but unfortunately, something happened, and a couple million dollars did not make it to the filmmakers.
Yeah, I'm guessing what happened was they didn't distribute the funds ultimately to who they were supposed to go to.
No, from what we understand of the process, they were money was coming in, and they were spending that money on advertising and other things. So it almost became like I wouldn't say a pyramid scheme, but like they needed new money to come in to keep the engine flowing, as opposed to they didn't take a percentage. So their business model was screwed from the beginning because they didn't take a percentage. They only took upfront fees. And then after upfront fees, they were basically on the hook for the rest of their lives to do all the work of tracking and reporting and stuff like that. It was a flawed system to begin with.
This has happened to also a lot of distributors have run into this problem. And like there's a foreign sales company that stopped selling, and they had screwed a lot of filmmakers because they had sold a lot of movies, collected money, and then never sent the money.
Shocking
to them.
I know, it's terrible. I can't believe. I'm shocked.
So to answer your question, sales sit on Stripe. They're sent to the filmmaker's Stripe account.
Sure.
And we take a fee on the way.
On the way out, you pull out your 96.
We're not holding it in an Altavat account or something.
No, got it. Exactly. Okay. So that was the main question I had for you when we first spoke. I was like, where's the money? Where's the work? Where's the flow of the money go through? Because that's where distributors get in trouble, and that's where aggregators get in trouble, and that's where filmmakers get in trouble.
It's all through Stripe is our best friend here with this. It's all, you know, I think people can be happy that we've integrated, you know, very responsible,
well-oiled
payment system.
Yeah, it's like PayPal, or it's like a bank account, essentially, is what it is. But it's an account that everybody, I mean, in the online e-commerce space uses. Spotify uses it. Shopify uses it, and all these kind of places do it. So it's something that's very secure. Now, one question I have for you, Mint: what are the numbers you're seeing in TVOD? Because TVOD, you know, is not really the growth area unless you could drive traffic,
Yeah. But it's such a great question, and it's such a thing. Okay. Maybe I'm just like, I'm such a believer that TVOD, you know, won't go away. I don't think it will. Like, I think we always have to have a way to cherry pick the movies we want to watch. You know, like, here's maybe a good reason why I think TVOD will always be something that we need to consider, but it's becoming a new thing that platforms aren't acquiring ready-made movies. Like, there are places are starting to cut what they're buying, because they'd rather take all that money they've raised through, you know, shareholders and go make their own stuff and then retain that in perpetuity.
Correct.
Right. So, but what that's doing, again, going back to the problem, is it's causing there to be a higher amount of volume of films that need a home or somewhere to be watched. So for that very reason, not every platform will take these movies. So there will be what I call orphaned titles out on the market looking for a foster home or a place to be given love.
No, I got you. I got you.
And I think that, you know, a place like Altavad, what we created was, again, we're seeing that, you know, again, and we talked about this on the phone. Filmmakers have access to tools to go make movies today. Like, you can go make a movie on, you know, your iPhone or whatever. And if you have a great enough concept and you execute it properly, you could make something pretty magical that, like, scales beyond your wildest imagination. And so that's a reality. We have tools. And now let's go to distribution. Like, what happens when you make that movie? What if there's no buyer for it? What if there's no plan to release it? What are we going to do? So what we're seeing is we're seeing more films on the market each year going to trying to get into film festivals. We see more festivals cutting what they're taking in. You know, it's like harder to get into a festival, I think, today more than ever, because the other shitty thing is festivals are also, and I'm not dissing them because I respect them, festivals are also taking first dibs from places like Netflix and these really big, powerful companies.
Yeah.
You know, like the most iconic, influential festivals have like slots for really big distributors and big companies that already have a put on their in their lineup. And it's all still star driven. I'm not knocking again. Yeah,
it's about asses, but it's asses and seats. They need asses and seats. Yeah, and stars do that. Problem. Yeah.
Right. So we truly want, I mean, you, me, everybody who supports direct, you know, independent film, we still need a place that takes care of independent film, independently minded people. But what happens to all these titles? They're not going to go to SVOD companies, subscription companies, because they don't value that content. There's no stars in it. Mm-hmm. It's not enough. The production value is not big enough.
Right.
They're not getting into some flashy film festival. So it's already off my list. It's not like an Ivy League college. I'm not going to recruit you to my company.
Right.
So again, going back to TVOD, why is TVOD important? Because people need to build their own world and sell directly to audiences. And the subscription companies can't take care of this amount of volume of titles. They can't reward those companies with enough advances. It's not financially doable for them. The only return, the only solution could be AVOD. And you'd have to, again, find third-party aggregation companies that can really, you can afford to get it, to get in the ballgame, to pay them a fee.
And even then now Tubi and Pluto and Peacock, they're not accepting. Right. They're very, very picky. Very picky now.
Right. It's hard to get on those channels, right? It's slim pickings, because those channels are selling to advertisers and they need star-driven talent and big name talent at a Sundance. So again, we have a big chain of event problem here. Anywhere you slice it, we have the same problem, and it's just, it's human nature. And that's the problem of visibility, easy access to audience. Like, look, we're all victim of going online looking for a movie to watch every night and being seduced by like a movie with a big star in it or a big director, right? But, you know, again, we think that TVOD and AltaVOD is the best solution to take care of thousands and thousands of filmmakers who need direct access to sell their movies tomorrow to an audience. And look, I think that audiences will still pay to rent movies if the price point is right. Like, I don't want to pay $20 to rent a new movie on Amazon. It's too much money. I just don't want to do it. So, but I like the movies that are coming out, but I don't want to pay $19.99 for it. So look, if you find the right price point, the right marketing campaign, and the right project, you could really sell and make a lot of money transactionally. There are movies that are doing very well transactionally still.
Oh, no, there's
the right one.
Yeah, it's not a question if they could, because I've had stories here of filmmakers doing $2-3 million in transactional, but the difference is that they have audiences that they can tap into, or they know how to drive it, or it's a niche film. And I wrote a whole book specifically about the power of the niche, because, and I use the vegan, like a vegan documentary, you know, when that movie was a Game Changers came out, which was on Netflix, I did everything. It was about vegan athletes, and I wanted to see it. It cut through all the other noise in Netflix world and Amazon world and Apple world. It didn't matter. I was going to, so I wanted to watch that film. So because of that, the second it was available for TVOD, I rented it. Obviously three weeks later it was on Netflix and I was upset, but I wanted to see it right away. But that niche was the power. So it's either niche, audience that you can tap into, or audience you can gather is the only way TVOD works. You're not going to be found like organically through TVOD. It's impossible to.
Right. But, and by the way, that's what's great is you kind of took the words out of my mouth as far as what gets asked of AltaVOD as a platform when we talk to distributors. People say, well, how many people watch your movies and how many users do you have? And I always have to say, look, that's not the question we should be asking. Because even if you're on any other TVOD platform, people have to know what mm-hmm. they want to watch going in to find your movie, unless you're guaranteed prime front page placement. But that's slim pickings today because there's too overly saturated market with a lot of distributors getting first dibs on front page placement. If you as a filmmaker are like, I want to put my movie on iTunes, I'm going to pay an aggregation fee of close to $2,000 for a couple platforms, right? It's most likely you're not going to get on the front page of iTunes, right? Mm-hmm. So you're still going to have to just be in a bucket of content that you're going to have to get really smart about how to drive people to that place, right? And again, that's what I'm a big believer that filmmakers are going to become like musicians, in that they're going to become like marketing geniuses.
They have to.
To keep up with this, right? To stay afloat, to keep your head above water, you have to have a really smart way of reaching that audience. And again, being a distributor with Utopia and sitting on that side of the fence, the playing field is level. We still have to think about how to reach people. Where are we going to spend a little bit of money here and there?
Right.
What's our message? What are our assets? These are things that any filmmaker could do tomorrow if they put their mind to it. And it really sounds like an after school special to say, to put your mind to it. But it really is true. Like, if you just like make your movie, but hold on to it, don't let go of it. Take it all the way across the finish line. Be brave, be bold. Don't just sell short and give it to somebody and say, thank you, distributor. Like, I hope you do something great with it. Like, chances are they don't really care about your movie. You're one of like many. You're just going to be another name on a statement that they can't even see because their eyes can't even read it that far down the page. But you know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like in that case, the point is we need to take more chances. We're in an industry right now where people need to be bold and take chances. And right. I believe that technology is fanning the flames of taking chance and taking risks. And again, we are not with Altavod claiming to be like, this is it. This is the one, man. You got to use it. We are hopefully one of many new tools in the market that could be supportive to you as a filmmaker to get your movie out there. Can you reach an audience? I believe in you. I think you can.
It's up to the filmmaker. Right. It's up to the filmmaker to do it. I mean, I remember when I was working at the video store that I lived in a time, and I know this is so difficult for anyone listening, but I think you can understand. I remember a time where I watched everything that came out every week. Like, I would watch 5 or 6 movies every week.
Amazing.
And they were brand new. But that was all that was released.
So that's all
week.
You saw. Right. Yeah.
That was all that was released that week from the studios, from independents.
Right. Wow.
That was the work. That was the flow of content. So I remember like when Bill and Ted came out, and like there was Bill and Ted, Assault of the Killer Bimbos, and like 3 other like trauma films, and that was, you know, and that was it for that week. And then next week was Predator, and you know, like there was just so little amount of content that you can consume everything. So you had that, the video store, and you had the ability to find stuff and discover stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's just we have a tsunami of content on a daily basis.
Yes,
so without being able to cut through all of that with either niche, with either targeting an audience, finding an audience. So you know, basically what you're doing is you're just giving people the tools and a platform to be able to monetize it you're meeting them half the way there. Like you're not the platform that's like, we're going to get it, and we're also going to have – we have a million people who are watching, you know, horror movies, and those horror movies – and then they're going to – like, it's, you're not that. You're the platform.
Yeah.
And that's actually great. I mean, VHX, before they were bought by Vimeo, was a great platform. It kind of started doing a little bit of what you were doing, and they were wonderful. But that kind of went off the deep end. But but that's the future. So I do agree with you. I think TVOD will we'll have a place, but it's all about audience and building that audience and doing that. But from what I hear, from what it sounds like, what you guys are doing, you're giving some nice new tools. And for everyone listening, I've seen the aesthetics of the site, and the aesthetics of the site are solid. I'm very much anybody watches my work, looks at my websites, I'm a stickler for design.
Yeah, I'm so with you. I am too.
I mean, design. Yeah. It's like you could do good design, good titles on a movie, good color correction, like, you know, nice trailer cut. I mean, it's like putting a lipstick on a pig. It could be a bad movie, but at least you faked it enough to get you through the door. And that's what a good website does, regardless of the content. And that's what Altavod does kind of out of the box, which I think is really cool.
I mean, it's, you know, again, some other things we share with when we talk about Altavod, Like DVDs, I really enjoyed DVD. I liked the physical. Like that was just my generation. I liked it, and the generation before me was vinyl. But you know, ever since DVDs have become not like the go-to for everybody, what happened to all the special features, all the content,
audio commentaries? Yeah, all sure.
So Altava now can be a place to celebrate all that additional content as well. Because look. I had a long talk this morning with the producer about onboarding his movies. And he does genre films, so he's got a lot of great content and director's cuts and other versions. But, you know, that movie you make just goes everywhere, all these TVOD, Fandango Now, Roku, iTunes, Amazon, bam, Google Play. It's typically the same experience. When you go there, it's like the argument. I can rent it, watch the trailer, who's in it? Oh, Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, cool. Like, it's the same thing, but we wanted Altava to be a different experience. We wanted it to give you a different type of experience with that film. So what we're asking filmmakers and producers to start doing is to think about using Altava in a different way compared to other platforms, meaning put a version of your movie, put it a director's cut, put special features at the end of the movie. Make it a different experience for your audience as a reason to go there to watch it. Because these other platforms don't really embrace all that other stuff, the pieces right. to the story. Mm-hmm. And also, when you sell a movie to a distributor, they ask for BTS. They want behind-the-scenes photos. They want deleted scenes. They want all this stuff, but they never really use it anywhere.
Right.
So it's kind of funny to me. It's like we built the platform to also embrace all of that extra stuff because that's part of your journey. You need to share that with an audience for people to be more emotionally engaged. Right. So again, that's why we kind of did it. But if you go to the platform, it each page is almost like your movie website where you can watch the movie, rent the movie, read about the movie, see who's involved, deleted scenes. You can upload extra video content, trailers, bonus footage. You could upload BTS images. You can link out to press. You could put your laurels from your festival on there so we can see where the movie's been. You know, it's just, it aggregates your experience, your journey. Mm-hmm. To give people more of an interesting piece of your life.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that is it's a tough question. Why do
the physical challenge?
Huh?
Take the physical challenge.
Take the it's about the, you're going to take the it's a Pepsi right. challenge. It's okay. a Pepsi challenge. Okay. So no, this is a general question. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Why do most films fail to make any money? Because they do. The majority of all independent films lose money. Even the majority of big films sometimes lose money. And you know.
Yeah. So your question is more about just film in general, not just independent movies.
Well, no, I'm going to say independent films because that's who listens to this. Does this thing? But okay. but cool. Movies in general, you know. I mean, the studios look they're all right. I'm not worried about Warner's and Disney and Universal. I'm more worried about independents. Yeah. And even not only like the guy who's making a $50,000 film, but I'm talking about a guy who made $1 million film, $1.5 million, mm-hmm. $2 million film. Yeah. Your film, The Argument. What was the budget? What's the budget, if you mind me asking?
Secret budget.
It was a secret. Under $25 million. Secret. Got it. It was under $25 million. That's what I always like to say. It's under $25 million. So these kind of budgets, like why do most of them just fail as far as financially? Not artistically, financially.
I'm going to answer your question, and I'm not. When I answer your question, I'm not trying to be like a politician right now, like dancing around it. I will answer the question. So, but I'm going to work my way in. So, okay. The word fail, I think, is subjective, because I'm a true believer that just making your movie is purely success. Like
agreed.
I think if you made your movie, you should sleep at night going, "Fuck, I did it! I made my movie."
Yes.
Their movie is lucky enough to come out.
Yes.
So someone can rent it or watch it. Fuck yeah. Way to go. You just entered a whole new class of somebody. You got your movie out, right? Mm-hmm. Someone rented it. Oh my God.
Oh, huge.
You are far from a failure in my mind.
Someone who's not your mom or your friends.
Yeah, whoever. Someone like you, you're at the end of the day, you different people have different reasons why they get into this stuff. If it's about making money and buying like an Alex Ferrari or eating sashimi every night or whatever your goal is, then maybe success and what it means to have made it is a whole other different interpretation of what that journey is going to be. if you just want to make your movie the way you want to make it and see your vision live and shine through and not be compromised along the way, that's a wonderful other goal that people have. And just to get that movie made and out there is a great success. If you're talking strictly financially, now we're thinking more as a producer, as an investor.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because arguably a director, really the job is to stay focused on the movie and make a great movie. Whether it sells or not, ultimately we shouldn't make you feel bad about it. If the movie doesn't work and it doesn't achieve what you set out to achieve creatively, maybe there was something you missed along the way that could have been better. Mm-hmm. But I think that the issues can be so many. It's such a great question. And I, again, will answer it. But the answer, there's many threads of answers here. It can fail because people overpaid for it, like a distributor. Again, in the eyes of who? The distributor or the producers or the
investor? So I'll make it very clear. I'll make it clear. So there, it is very broad. So I'll make it clear. So why do filmmakers who invest money in their film generally most of the time do not recoup their initial investment in the quote unquote product?
Like a self-funded
movie. Yeah. If it's self-funded or investor funded, if you make $1 million and you had someone spend $1 million, you know this as well as I do, the chances of generating $1 million with a film that's not star driven, that's not niche driven, that's not genre driven, I mean, you start knocking off chances of that movie ever making a dollar back because of the general distribution model that's out there right now. And also just the world that we live in right now. I mean, Warner Brothers is having problems trying to make money off of their slate this year. So,
but that's true. But even mentioning Warner Brothers is actually a good thing because it shows you that at many levels of this work, there's a lot of the same problems we're finding. Mm-hmm. So you're not alone. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So that's comforting to know. Like, you know, even if you make your movie on your laptop, you know, in your bathroom, you still have the same problems as Warner Brothers does.
but they arrive at their problems in much more style than I do, sir.
It take a lot longer. Yeah, no, true. But I think the problems can be this: if it's strictly money, I made a movie, I paid for it, I want to make my money back. So usually, well, if you sell to a distributor, now you're behind them in the waterfall. Mm-hmm. So you sit behind the distributor. Now they have to recoup their marketing or their MG. And they have to make their distribution fee off the top of the recoupment of first dollar in. So they're taking a distribution fee. The rest goes into your recoupment, you know, marketing spend, which goes to market your movie. So it's like, I mean, that's great. Distributors take risks and work really hard to support filmmakers. Typically, it's not everyone's bad or something. Mm-hmm. But the reality of the beast is once you make your movie and finance it, it has to do pretty well financially to get through the distributor's collection process to then hit you. It has to have made money somewhere along the way. TVOD, SVOD, AVOD, theatrical.
And don't forget there's like, if it's on Amazon making money, Amazon gets a piece. So now another piece.
Exactly. Then that hits a distributor. It's just the nature of the beast is that we live in a world where in order to tap into all these tools, there's got to be some kind of rev share along the way. Mm-hmm. And then that rev share has to then flow to you, the filmmaker. So that can sort of whittle down what you make. If people spend incorrectly, like if you make your movie for too much money, like you've over budgeted or overpaid for something, mm-hmm. that can put you at a financial risk of ever making your money back. Hopefully you made a better movie because of it, but sometimes the product doesn't even get on the screen and you got stuck with all these extra fees. But so it could be a problem from the budgeting. The concept was definitely outside of the league of the budget level. Like mm-hmm. we did not execute properly. The distributor we got involved with overspent on the marketing campaign, foolishly spent through good money after bad, and we'll never see an ROI on their money, which means I'll never make a penny and I'll live in recoupment
in perpetuity.
Yeah. Unless your contract has the ability to buy yourself out of it or something, but typically it's renewing every year until you've recouped your money back. But it could just be everything from the people who you work with or yourself maybe didn't take the right steps, didn't make the right decisions, to the people you're working with wasn't the best relationship to support your movie, mm-hmm. or they really tried and it just didn't connect, or COVID happened, or something in the world swept out the campaign. Again, there's so many layers to this question. It's such an important one. But you know what I mean? But here's the common thread in all of this is we've got to be smart. We've got to be tactical. We've got to be aware. We've got to be educated. We've got to think like the other person. We've got to be open-minded. We've got to be understanding. We've got to be flexible. Like in anything I described to you, you've got these personality traits are really important.
Yeah.
Because I think you could do your best to avoid these pitfalls, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, like I'm a filmmaker. I love to make movies. I think every night about the next movie I want to make. Every movie idea I think about, I kind of know my budget level already based on my idea. I know what's going to cost me a lot of money. I know what scenes to not even write because it's going to be way too much money for that budget level. I know that it's a genre that if I get this actor, it'll do really well in certain international markets. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of doing my homework along the way and conceiving these ideas, already thinking about the release strategy. You know what I mean? And again, that's not everyone's doing that, but I think we're heading into a world, as I mentioned before, where people are going
to
start doing this.
And
it's going to really protect their product out mm-hmm. of the gate. Before you've even made it, you've put everybody in the best position to do really well. And that's all we could do is give ourselves the best shot, right? You know? Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
One other question I wanted to ask you, because I mean, I wrote in my book in regards to the music industry. What happens in the music industry is currently happening in our industry. I call it the devaluation of art, of content, where before it used to cost $20 for an album. Now it's essentially free. I mean, you're paying, you know, you get a Spotify account and you're listening to the entire catalog of the Beatles, which used to cost hundreds of dollars if you wanted the entire catalog.
To access it.
Even at a dollar a song, even at $99.99 per album, it was still some revenue. Now I heard somewhere like Beyonce is making like 3.3 cents a stream or out of 1,000 streams or something like that. It's like insane the way artists are being paid. So I just modeled what the music industry was doing. I'm like, guys, look, musicians figured it out. And that's why I want to ask you, because you are a musician and you've kind of seen this firsthand, where it used to be the album used to make money. Then it was about touring. And really the real money was made around touring, unless you own the publishing. If you own the publishing, you got radio play, you could get paid off that. And residuals, you could get paid. I mean, Billy Joel's still doing very well off of his catalog. Where now newer artists don't have those options. So then it was all about touring. And then now it's not even about touring as much as like merchandise. And it's not even merchandise, it's access. So now after the gig, you sell $150 tickets for fans to come in to take pictures with you and get autographs. And this is things that musicians had to do to survive.
Yeah.
And then sponsorship deals, if you're big enough to get a sponsorship deal. These are the things that musicians have to do. Where filmmakers were still living in the 90s, thinking that in the Sundance days, where the lottery ticket, I'm going to get the lottery ticket, and I kind of brought this model in, like, as you've got to understand all these other avenues, and you also have to create other revenue streams for your films.
Absolutely.
So what do you, so from your point of view in the music industry, is everything I just said pretty accurate?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I got signed in 2002. I was one of those like last record deals at the time where it was becoming streaming mostly. Mm-hmm. I was signed by Jimmy Iovine to Interscope Records. He became a mentor. And I sat with him while he vented to me about illegal downloading.
Right.
And he's like, and Rooney is right in that audience that likes to download records for free. What are we going to do? And I was still going to Best Buy City signings. There was still a physical side. We still had CDs. I sold them after the show. I was an artist at a label watching the industry change outside the window. And then when I finally was let out of my deal and I could go do whatever I wanted to do, I embraced this new world of independent music and I became an independent musician. Mm-hmm. I recorded my records myself. I basically did them in my own studio and they were free to me. Mm-hmm. And then I put them out through CD Baby or TuneCore, an aggregator, and I marketed them myself. And luckily I had enough fans through Rooney that I could keep bringing them new music and they were excited to hear it. But I mean, look, it's really hard. Music is real, another level of hard right now because
yes.
People forget, you know what I mean? Because touring, by the way, touring is so expensive. I think the music industry definitely, I call it like stepped on landmines, and the film industry is now walking down that same path and hopefully is going to know where not to step, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that the music industry, everything we do at AltaVod is completely taking our cues from music industry recovered from the sort of uphill battle of people want content right now, how technology is influencing it. And I think the music of the film industry, as you said before, has been really old school and ability to adapt to new times. And actually, I see it every day because we take calls every day of, you know, promoting our platform to new distributors. And it's really hard to get people to really understand that we need to be thinking differently today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the problem, by the way. It's like we kind of the industry actually feed the beast of our own problems. And I think we as an industry need to become more open-minded to change and taking chances. And whenever anyone asks me about what's working out there, what platform, where am I seeing success? I always pitch everybody on what I call the all the above strategy, on a multiple choice test, circle that last little box, the all the above, because the truth is there's not one silver bullet way to have success today and to make money and to reach an audience. You have to just try everything. You have to be willing to try everything. You have to be willing to say, let's take chances and risks of how we take our movies and how we market them and put them out. And I think people are sometimes too precious with their film. They kind of sit on the sidelines waiting too long to get a distribution deal or find the right buyer. And sometimes they can really miss a window of opportunity if they had just sort of been bold and taken a chance and been more open-minded. I think the distributors are learning the hard way right now that they need to change. And I really think that like a long time ago, these big studios had a window years ago to really be more of a competitor to Netflix and to build an SVOD platform.
Oh.
It's crazy how long it's taken, but
took 10
that
years.
Alone should tell you that
10 years,
all that money and all those titles, they still were slow to get into the game, just in the same way as the major labels were slow to get into the digital music streaming world. They waited on the sidelines and then here comes, you know, Apple, and they said, here's iTunes, go screw off. And everybody's like, oh, now we got to play nice with you, you know, Apple. And same with Spotify. Everybody, I mean, the difference with Spotify is that labels actually took stock in Spotify. So they had an interest in Spotify's success, not in their own artist's success. They were making money on the success of the platform over the success of the signing. And that's a conflict of interest if you think about it, because you should really be taking care of the clients you sign, not the places you own stock in. A whole other conversation. But again, everything we're doing at AltaVod, and I'm glad that you had me on because you felt like there was something I was doing that was worth sharing with your audience, which mm-hmm. I really appreciate.
Sure.
You know, first goal for me, AltaVod becomes successful in that we're helping filmmakers reach audiences and have a distribution alternative to what they wanted to do with their movie. I think there's way too many movies out there, and I say that to anyone watching. If you made a movie and it's sitting on a hard drive and it has never seen the light of day, I don't know what you're waiting for. Put your movie out like tomorrow. There's really no point in waiting. Like, what is the point? Pretend your movie blows up on AltaVod. Distributors are going to be coming to hit you up to try to sign you after the fact to try to flip you to an SVOD or an international deal because they're going to see natural traction, organic traction on AltaVod. And by the way, if you talk to any A&R guy right now at a major label, the way that they find artists is by seeing what's blowing up organically on Spotify. And then they sign you or YouTube or social media. They look for artists that are already proving success so that you're less of a risk, right? So films are like the same thing. Put your movie out, show audience, show growth, show traction, because that's hard to do. And then go shop yourself to people and say, we just sold 10,000 rentals on AltaVod, and we just got 3 offers from the UK for like a streaming platform on there. Like, and now people are going to want to sign you and give you another offer. Yeah.
Are labels, because I don't know enough about labels. I dabbled in the music industry very, very early on in my career. And I was in the studios and it's a whole other conversation. I don't want to get people to even know that I used to write songs and stuff back in the day. I've never mentioned that on the show before, but I did back in the day. I did. I've done a lot. I've done olive oil, songwriting.
You got to share. Why don't you do a bundle where you sell some songs on vinyl and
no. olive oil? My songs do not deserve vinyl. That I can promise you. But I played around with the label with labels and stuff. But are they as notorious as distributors for not paying artists for all of that kind? I don't know enough about that. Is it similar? Is like, oh, I'm owed so much money, but the label screwed me. I've heard of the label screwing the artist. That's not a new thing. But on the financial standpoint, is it a general statement? You know, like, because you could say generally, there's a lot of distributors out there who screw over filmmakers. Period. I mean, that are predatory. But are labels in that? You know, a portion of them as well.
I think that see or hear of terrible stories, like in many industries. There's stories of contractors not getting paid for the work they did. You know, the story of building homes or whatever. Like, there are stories in many industries where people somehow got stiffed or like promised and didn't keep them. I mean, again, I think that's human nature. It's a problem. I think it's like a human problem, not just an industry specific problem, but. You know, look, we're the good thing about technology is technology is also getting better about reporting earnings to you.
Yeah.
So there are better ways to account, right? It's not just like someone sitting in an office with a bunch of stack of papers going like, you made blah, blah, blah today, like probably in the old days. It's pretty easy to log in and see like what you made and be like, hey, I can point to something and you should pay me this. It's kind of hard to dispute that, you know? So that's good. That's a layer of protection. I've heard... more problems in the music industry with money based on what you mentioned earlier, which is the royalty structure, where people aren't really getting their fair share of like earnings from like a success of a song. But the tricky thing is with bigger companies, and I hear this with filmmakers that are doing like studio level movies, the horror stories that I've heard about not getting paid are more with the bigger scale projects. Because there's higher levels of P&A marketing spend. So it's harder to track how much they really spent versus how much really came in and how much they're getting. Because they could keep you in recoupment nightmare.
Forever.
Like they could keep you in the hole forever. Yeah. Like you'll never make money unless you truly know your movie's such a hit that something's amiss here, like with what I'm getting. Then you can really audit and it becomes a whole thing. But those are the stories you hear about in the music industry. It's really like mega, mega success stories. But it's hard to really challenge accounting if you know your movie or your music didn't really make much money. Like I released an independent record. I put a couple songs out through a third-party aggregator. And I swear I got a check for 20 cents one time in the mail. No, I swear. And by the way, and I'm not even like contesting it because I know that song, no one even heard it. So I just thought it was funny that I got my 20 cent check. It probably cost more to send it to me.
I was about to say the stamp costs more than the actual. Yeah, exactly. It's like a bad Seinfeld. It's like a bad Seinfeld episode. Exactly. Like, do you remember that one when he got the penny residuals and he had like 5,000 penny residual checks he had to endorse?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to really get angry if you're like, you know, your thing didn't really meet like a great commercial success. Where something's like, you're not really upset. You don't think somebody stole money from you, but it's really the stories of like those indie darling movies that became like a mega, like Napoleon.
You ran my mind. Napoleon. I was going to say Napoleon. There was a huge lawsuit with Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah.
Right. So like it's those kinds of movies where I think they end up going to a distributor. I don't know who put it out, but I'm guessing it's a distributor that was able to create scale. Meaning it wasn't such a baby company that couldn't keep up with scale. Mm-hmm. It was probably like a Focus Features or Searchlight.
I think it was Searchlight that did it. I think so.
Yeah. Something like that. Right. Because that's what that is. It's a company that looks for indies that they can flip to a bigger audience. but they have the means for big distribution, but they can start small and spread the wildfire if they're showing traction. But those companies probably are the kinds of ones that can also keep you in recoupment in the hole if they want to, because they can throw money at theatrical. And those were the days when deploying Dynamite were still a bit old school. I think, look, today, I think that every distributor, there's good and bad out there. I'm a founder in a company called Utopia, and we are acquiring movies every day, and we're releasing them as a distributor. We're putting them on all the TVOD platforms. We're selling them to places like HBO. We sell them in international markets. We do well with those movies internationally. We find homes for them. We do all types of deal structures with filmmakers. Sometimes they're able to work with us in a way where it's marketing and not about upfront advances, so they're not in the hole right away. We're really open with what we spend. We're like, we'll throw that at it. Yeah, see if it works. Like, we're really open with, like, where do we spend? Why are we spending? Filmmaker, it's more of a nice hands-on experience with artists.
You mean it's like a partnership, like it should be.
You know what? You could call it like we care about filmmakers. I think that, of course, there are some films, like, as we scale as a company, not every movie gets as much time as the others, but we're very much, as long as we disclose that, then we feel like filmmakers hopefully will feel they sort of got what they signed up for. Because it's all about expectations, right? Like, any company out there, if you get in business with them, you might in your mind have an expectation of what's going to happen with your movie that might not even be on this planet. It might just be from an old book you read or something someone told you. So it's important to check yourself before you wreck yourself in terms of the expectations that you set with these deals you get into. And look, you as a filmmaker have the right to ask questions. Ask before you sign the deal. I mean, it's a collaboration. Like, everybody in this climate right now is trying to stay afloat. Like, nobody's got it. Like, every company's really working hard to make sure they can keep their lights on.
Yeah.
So if you're going to work with a distributor, talk to them. They're humans. They're people. They have a team. Get to know them. I mean, we have someone on our team named Brooke who deals with filmmakers every day. She's like the focal point of every campaign. We talk to Brooke, right? We tell Brooke, filmmakers work their ass off to make their movie. You are everything to them. You're the person, you're the face who acquired the movie. You're talking to them. Show them respect. Get back to them quickly. When you talk to them, like, make them feel the love. Like, make them, you care, right? We're a distributor. We care about you. Those little things go such a long way. And unfortunately, we've lost maybe distributors lost themselves along the way, which is why I founded Utopia, was to put back the human emotional part of being a distributor, right? The collaborative part of you. You're not just a robot, mm-hmm. right? These aren't just like hamburgers. These are movies. So, like, give a shit. And I think that's what I could say. I stand by that as a company. I'm proud of what we built, because I think we've really put some great movies out, and people can, again, go discover our movies. But, you know, again, put the heart back in the job kind of thing.
Now, where can people find more about AltaVod and Utopia and everything else you do?
Yeah. AltaVod.com, AltaVod.com. You can sign up right away as a filmmaker. There's no cost to get on involved. You don't even have to put your movie on. You can just create a page and use it later. You can discover some great movies, tell your friends about it. If there are movies that you want to see that we have, buy from us. Don't go to another place, because it goes to the filmmaker. We're getting some wonderful distributors who are trusting our platform, and we have some great movies on there from top-level distributors. So that says something, that we have a good tool set for them. UtopiaDistribution.com. We put out a great documentary called Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets by the Ross Brothers, one of the top picks of last year's best documentaries. We have the new Martha Cooper, Great Street Photographer doc coming out, that was a Tribeca. Crestone, all about SoundCloud rappers, coming out next month. 1982 by a great up-and-coming new filmmaker. Again, what you described, like, he put his money into his movie. Mm-hmm. It's a really touching story that went to Toronto Film Festival. We acquired it. It's technically sort of a foreign film, but it just came out in 1982. Highly recommend it. Anyway, just keep in touch with us. I mean, you could follow me, Robert Schwartzman, on Instagram, and I post all about AltaVod and Utopia. Mm-hmm. You could follow Utopia Movies on Instagram. But anyway, I really appreciate you trusting like me to come on here. And if anyone has questions about Altavad, like, you know, hit up support@altavad.com. We answer your questions. We have humans there. It's not just like a robot. These are people from distributors, from fellow filmmakers. These are people who care about movies, who created a platform for you. And we sort of are working backwards from problems to solve them. And if you want to write us about a problem that we should solve, we'll hear you out.
Brother, I appreciate what you're doing. You can hear it in your voice, the kind of love that you have for what you do. So I appreciate you trying to help filmmakers out, and hopefully your new platform can help some filmmakers get paid. So thank you, my friend.
Appreciate that. Thank you for having me. Thank you guys for watching.
I want to thank Robert for coming on the show and dropping those knowledge bombs on the tribe today. Thank you so much, Robert. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to get access to Altavad, just head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/454. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and leave a good review for the show at filmmakingpodcast.com. It really helps us out a lot. Now, I have been in the lab working on some very big surprises for the Indie Film Hustle tribe. So I need you to keep an eye out for that. Not only are we bringing amazing guests on the show to help you guys on your filmmaking journey, there might be some other surprises I'm working on as well. So keep an eye out for that. Thank you again so much for listening, guys. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle podcast at indiefilmhustle.com. That's INDIEFILMHUSTLE.com.